Kamel. Yes, Hashem, we should be zeke for all on fire to live in this city. Gesunte Heit. Where were we?
Bishalom.
Bishalom. Bibitachon. Huh? What two psukim? Who? V'yishavtem levetar ba'aretzichem v'nasati shalom ba'aretz. Shavtem levetar ba'aretzichem v'nasati shalom ba'aretz. All right, now somebody's going to ask why my head is a little...
Rabbi, do you have any more of those lessons that you gave out last week?
All right. All right, you know, let's do 16. Let's just go through chapter 16. Let's get into that. Oh, there she goes. Okay. Let's go through chapter 16. I like to be honest with you, straight up, forward, upfront. My head isn't screwed on too well this morning, and I didn't prepare the way I would want to prepare, so let's say it's going to be one of those mornings that we're going to learn it together. But don't try and take advantage of me and think that you're going to be able to say all sorts of pshatim. Let's go. B'shnat 17 shana lepekah ben Remaliahu, malach Ochaz ben Yotam, melech Yehuda. In the 17th year of Pekah ben Remaliahu, how long is Pekah ben Remaliahu going to be king?
2 years.
Huh? How long will Pekah ben Remaliahu?
20 years.
20 years. In the 17th... In the 17th year of Pekah ben Remaliahu?
20.
All right. So Ochaz the son of Yosam became king of Yehuda. Ben Esrim Shona Ochaz b'Malchal. 20 years, he was 20 years old when he became king. V'sheish Esrei Shona Malab Yerushalayim. And 16 years he was king in Yerushalayim. He did not do that which was right in the eyes of God as his father David. Now David is always used as the representative of Malchus Beis David, the house of David. And here the pasuk says it out clearly, straight. Ochaz did not do that which was right in the eyes of his father, in the eyes of God, as David his father had. Vayela b'derech malchei Yisrael. He went in the way of the kings of Israel. This is already a much stronger condemnation of Ahaz, which means, of course, that it's indicating that there's idolatry as well already in Yehuda, if he's going in the way of the kings of Israel. The Gamez Beno Hevir Ba'esh Ketoavat Hagoyim. He put his son through fire. Now, what it always means, it's usually misunderstood, but it really means is there was a pagan rite where father sent his child between two pillars of fire. It doesn't mean that he burned his son to death, but it was some kind of a pagan rite, and in the Torah it says, "Lo, yes, umizarach lo titein lahavir lamalach." It says in Torah, you should not permit, you shouldn't have your children go through fire for malach. Although yimatzet lachah, another pasuk in Torah, you shall not find amongst you marvir b'no bito ba'esh, a person who takes his son or daughter through fire. So it doesn't really mean that, it doesn't at all mean that he killed his son, but that he performed this rite upon his son. So what you really want is that I should now become an expert in idolatry and pagan and heathen practices, and I should be able to figure out what the meaning of those practices are. I really don't know. I don't know. There are a lot of Unless, of course, there was some kind of deity of fire, and they felt that they were being—they were appeasing the god of fire. I don't know. I mean, I. Yeah. Okay. All right. That's good. That's fine. That's fine. But the that there is a Gemara that says the. The Gemara in Sanhedrin, the fact is that it's a machloket between Rishonim as to what really happened. Did he indeed want to kill his son? Did he not want to kill his son? Yosef ben Matityahu, the historian, says, Behekim is Bechod b'Yerushalayim, that Ochaz, in fact, established altars in Yerushalayim, Behekriv aleim le'lilim, and he brought sacrifices to the gods. He followed in the customs of the Canaanim, Gamet Bno La'ola. Yosef ben Matthiahu says that yes, he brought his son as an Ola. What you're, the Gemara in Sanhedrin that you're talking about is, Av Chizkiyo HaMelech Bikesh Aviv Lasos Lokein El Shesachoso Imo. Ahaz wanted to do it to his son Chizkiyahu, but his mother saved him. Go ask me how to explain this kind of practice. I can't understand. The fact is that the Gemara later we're going to come to Menashe. Menashe is going to be the son of Chizkiyahu. Menashe, 55 years, he's going to be king longer than any other king, and he was one of the worst king of the kings of Yehuda, an idolater, and one of the rabbis in the Gemara condemns him terribly, and Menashe appeared to him in a dream, the Gemara says. And he said, you don't know, Menashe tells him, you don't know what the Yetzirah of idolatry was. If you would have been living in my time, you would have picked up your coat in order to run more quickly to an idol. We're talking about something that is no longer, that we are no longer capable of understanding. But there was something, I would say, pious about idolatry. In addition to the fact, of course, the Gemara says that there was a great deal, and this is so, there was a great deal that was promiscuous about idolatry. Gemara's famous comment is, Lo avdu Yisrael avidizah, Israel worshipped idols only kedei lahatel lehen arayis b'fahesia, in order to permit them illicit relationships in public. In other words, the idea of idolatry was, not only like the cults. In a sense, in other words, a person wants to do an avera. The only thing that takes takes all the joy out of doing an avera is the fact that you have a guilty conscience. You can't enjoy an avera. I mean, I'm not saying this from experience, but I you can't enjoy an avera with a guilty conscience. If you have a God looking over your shoulder, it just takes the guns of time, our horse, in the Avera. No time left in the Avera. And the Gemara understood this. Lo avdu Yisrael avidu zara. In other words, what drew them to idolatry, and we don't have to understand it only as adultery or illicit marriages. This is what drew them to that. In other words, the desire to be free of restraints, a desire just to do whatever I want to. And don't people sometimes think, I just want to do whatever I want to do? But you can't do it. Never. We were raised in good Jewish homes, and we have a guilty conscience. There's a Rebbein Shalom hanging over us. So they had to get rid of the Rebbein Shalom. And the way to get rid of the Rebbein Shalom was by trading him in for something else. And you see, you can't come out and say openly, you know, I push it, want to have a McDonald's. You have to create an idolatry. An idolatry. Well, you have to, an ideology around it. That was not a bad slip. You have to create an ideology. It's getting worse. It's getting worse. Or it's getting better. We find it even today. We find it today. I tell you, I can't believe it. I should have brought it yesterday. I read an article in Ma'ariv yesterday. And the fellow was writing about the about the step that may be taken by this government not to recognize reform conversions. This is going to be a blow to American Jewry. This, that great Jewry that numbers approximately 5.5 million. And then he goes on, and then comes the sentence, I didn't know whether he was kidding or he was serious. I read it over a few times, he was serious. He says, how can we, what right do we have to hurt Jewry that gave us Henry Kissinger, Barbara Streisand, Woody Allen, Bob Dylan? I'm telling you, it was yesterday's Marit. Idols. Henry Kissinger, the same Henry Kissinger who withheld the resupply of Eretz Yisrael in 1973 until Nixon, God bless him, so I have an alichtik Gan Eden, you understand, until Nixon is the one that gave the orders to resupply. I have a brother who lives in Petah Tikva. I remember he told me then that when the planes started coming into the United States, they had to work 24 hours a day in order to unload. So they called on people to volunteer. So my brother, Petah Tikva, not far from the airport, he ran to the airport to volunteer. People, mamish, with tears in their eyes, were taking off ammunition and guns and shells and all of this. Henry Kissinger! The Yantif have unloaded the planes. So you see the story? The story jives. How do you like that? Petah Tikva, they were near the airport. And the call went out that they need people to help them unload. So this is the grace of Gedilla, you understand. Bob Dylan is not dead. Question is, Barbara Streisand, I don't know. I think she's engaged to be married now, and I don't know whether the felt, is he Jewish or not Jewish?
What's the difference? She's too old.
It doesn't make it. That's not the Shiloh. Yeah, but this is...
She's been living with everyone else.
But no, what troubles me is... What troubles me is, you know, in a million years, I couldn't expect this fella to write. A country that gave us the Lubavitcher Rebbe, Reb Soloveitchik, Reb Moshe Feinstein, Reb Yankov Kamenetsky, Reb Aaron Kotler. What are you talking about? No. But the idea that's expressed by the Gemara is absolutely true. The Gemara makes it very clear that idolatry was used as an ideological, a seeming ideological vehicle in order to free Jews from restraints, the old Malchus Shemayim.
Isn't that like the conservative reform movement also?
That's what you said.
No, I didn't say that. No, I didn't say that. I'm ready to grant the conservative and reform movement that they meant well, but they were dead wrong. I'm even ready to go, there may be some of them who thought that if we don't make Yiddishkeit easier, we're going to lose. I mean, I can understand some, but...
Historically, we're talking today. Historically, you're right. Today, I don't know if you're right.
I'm talking about why it was brought into being. I'm not talking about the reform movement. The reform movement was certainly inspired by the desire of Jews in Germany to be equal to their Christian neighbors. And many of them indeed took the step of converting to Christianity. I mean, this was unfortunately a very, very common thing in Germany. The next best thing, or the next worst thing, was the reform movement. The conservative movement was the compromise between the two. As a Schwed designer, it's difficult. We've got to make it easier for people. Let them come to the synagogue. I believe that they meant it. They meant it. There was a series. They just had no idea. They weren't able to see that 50 years down the line, they were less Jews and that they would fail miserably. They didn't see that. But here, Gemara is right. You know, men can't simply turn around and say, I want to do an Avera, or I want to do this specific Avera. What you have to do is you have to justify, you have to rationalize, you even have to take the Avera and give it an aura of piety. That's precisely what most pagan and heathen cultures did. They knew that a lot of what they were doing was absolutely wrong. There were basic... No, she can't. As long as she doesn't disagree with me. So that's it. That's why Menashe said, if you would have been, he comes to in a dream, I think he comes to Abaye or Achav, he comes to in a dream, and he says that if you would have lived at the time of idolatry, you would have run to it. Now, this is the other side of the coin. In other words, on the one hand, I've given so many shurim pointing out that idolatry was only practiced by a relatively small number of Jews. But even in that small number, idolatry had some kind of a... there was some kind of a fascination to it. The fascination, of course, was a negative one. But it cloaked itself like everything, like every ugly movement. Every ugly movement has to create its own philosophy, its theology, its ideology. Everybody does that. They're doing it all the time. And they will justify the worst nonsense of all. That's all. Ketava, Mariela, Bedad, Malchi, Israel, he went to the way of the kings of Israel, Gamas, Beno, Heribay, she brought his son across in fire, Ketava, Tagoyim, like the abominations of the nations, Asher, Hodish, Hashem, Otam, Bifnei, Bnei, Israel, that God had cast out from before the children of Israel. Vayezabdeach, Vayekater, Babamot, Va'al HaGvaot, and he sacrificed and he brought incense on the high places and on the hills, the Tachat Kol Eitz Ranon, and under every fresh tree. There was an outbreak of idolatry that was encouraged by Ahaz. And Oz Yaleh, Ritzin Melech Aram Pekah ben Ramayahu Melech Yisrael, Yerushalayim Lamuchama, then Ritzin the king of Aram, and Pekah ben Ramayahu, the king of Israel, went up to Yerushalayim to war by Yotsuru al Ahaz. All of this is described in Sefer Yeshayahu. We said the Navi at the time of Uziyahu, Yotam, Achaz, Yechizkiyahu, Malchei Yehuda, the Navi who is going to prophesy for a period of 90 years is going to be Yeshayahu. So it says that Ritzin, king of Aram, and Pekah ben Ramayahu, the king of Israel, came up to war against Yerushalayim by Yotsuru al Achaz, and they besieged Achaz below Yachlu Lihilachem. They weren't able to wage war against Yehuda. Of course, what it means, therefore, is even though Yehuda has fallen so terribly in the days of Achaz, but they would not be able to conquer the city of Yerushalayim. That they're going to cause a great deal of death and destruction in Yehuda? Yes. But they will not wait, they will not capture Yerushalayim. Bo'etahi, Heishiv Ritzin Elacharamet Eilat La'aram. At that time, Ritzin, the king of Aram, brought back, he returned Eilat to Aram. Eilat had been captured earlier by one of the Malchei Yehuda. Now it's changing hands again. And it's going back to Aram. And he uprooted the Jews from Eilat. The Adomim bo Eilat by Yeshusham. And the Adomim came to Eilat and they stayed there ad hayom hazeh until this day. There are a number of prakim that deal with Ahaz. He speaks to Ahaz in chapter 7, I believe, and 8. And then there are going to be the last four, 36, 37, 38, 39. Those are the historic chapters of Yeshayahu. But I will just hang you there. I will take care of it. Now, I know that you're going to ask me, it says Aromim in the Pasuk, and we read it Adomim. And then you're going to ask it, right? So I don't know. So what should I do? I have a feeling. I only have a feeling here. No.
Yeah, we read it.
It does matter. The fact is, we're talking about Eilat. Eilat was right next to the land of Edom. Right there. That's Edom. Aqaba. Right across the bay is already Edom. It may very well be that Aram assisted Edom. In other words, Aram, by virtue of the fact that Aram had waged war with Yehuda and weakened Yehuda, so Edom was able to reclaim Eilat. So what it really means is, it was, in a sense, an effort that was accomplished by both Aram and Edom. Both of them together. That's really what's happening over here. And the Kriya, the Ketiv, because the ones to whom it goes, Aram is all the way up in the north. Aram is Syria. Edom is right there by Eilat. Aram assisted Edom in getting it back.
Yehuda.
Yehuda. They were the ones who had captured it before. That was at the beginning of someplace at the beginning of Malachim Bet or the end of Malachim Aleph, where it says, I think it was Yehoshaphat or others who
921.
There's even before that. All right, let's see. Nine. How do you?
Oh,
you're very good. Yeah, very good. 926? No, wait.
Yeah.
No.
That it originally belonged to the Edomites.
That it had originally belonged to the Edomites? All right, but there are a number of Sukkim that tell us that it kept changing hands. All right, here. So yeah, I know what I'm talking about. First of all, at the end of Malachim Aleph, it says that Yehoshaphat, together with Ahazio, wanted to prepare boats that were going to go to Tarshish and through Eilat, and the boats broke. And then later on, it says that he returned Eilat. You know, it may even be in Divrei Hayamim that he brought back Eilat. But what's significant over here is the following. What's significant over here is the following. And there are sort of, this is one of the little indications of what has happened. Sefer Malachim, Malachim Bet, or say Malachim Aleph ended with Yehoshaphat being the king of Yehuda. Yehoshaphat is a great tzaddik. Despite the fact that Yehoshaphat is a great tzaddik, well, let's say there are four chapters in Sefer Divrei Hayamim that deal with Yehoshaphat. I'm taking you back a little bit because it's going to be important here, and I'll show you precisely how it's important. Yehoshaphat was king of Yehuda. Yehoshaphat was a tzaddik. He did that which was right in the eyes of God. Kid David, like his father David. He went in the footsteps of David. Yehoshaphat is a tzaddik. Yehoshaphat undertook a program of educating all of Yehuda in Torah, and he sent teachers to every town, village, and hamlet. Yehoshaphat established a system, a judiciary system, unparalleled and unmatched until his time. Yehoshaphat took part in three wars. In one of them, he was the beneficiary of such great, miraculous aid and assistance of God. Very little is written about Yehoshaphat in Malachim Aleph or Bet. Yehoshaphat is in Malachim is really part of the story of first Ahav. He goes with Ahav to battle in Ramoth Gilead. And then he goes with his son for war against Moab. There's one sentence that's important by Yehoshaphat, and I'll just read the sentence. Toward the end of Sefer Malachim Aleph, when they are summing up the greatness of Yehoshaphat, if you want to look, it's Malachim Aleph, Perek Chav Bet, 22. It says, Pasuk 43 by Yelech Bechol Derech Asa Aviv Lo Sorry Manu Lasot Hayosha Ben Hashem. Pasik Mem Hey Vayashle Mehok Shafati Melech Yisrael, Shafat made peace with the king of Israel. And then the pasik that interests me, the pasik that is most significant, is pasik Mem Chet. Malachim Aleph Perek Chav Bet Umelech Ein Be'edom. There is no king in Edom, Nitzav Melech. A governor, there is a governor who's king. And either the governor was, you know, a Jewish high commissioner, or somebody who was appointed by the Melech Yehuda. This had been going on from the days of David until Yehoshaphat. Edom was a vassal state under Yehuda. And here comes this little pasukel over here. And this little pasukel is a turning point. And I'm reading in chat in Melachim Aleph.
Yeah.
Kings 1, chapter 22, pasuk 48. Is it a small pasuk?
Yes.
Umelech ein ve'edom, there is no king in Edom, Nitzav Melech, the governor who is appointed by Yehuda is king.
Five words.
Those 5 words are most probably the most significant words in Sefer Melachim. Because what those 5 words are telling us is that Yehoshaphat is the last of the kings of Yehuda from the time of David, where Edom remains a vassal state. It says a few prakim later, in the days of his son, Edom rebelled against Israel. What's happening is the following. Rivka is pregnant, and her pregnancy is a very painful one. She goes to the Beis Medrash of Shem Ve'eva and she asks, what's happening? Why all of this pain? So God tells her, there are 2 nations that are in your womb. And these 2 nations are struggling. And they will struggle throughout all of history, except that at the end of history, the older one is going to serve the younger one. Esav will be subservient to Yaakov. But during history, there will be moments at which Yaakov rises and Esav is down, and then there are times at which the pendulum is going to swing and Esav will be preeminent and Yaakov is going to be down. The barometer, the thermometer, the way by which you're able to measure what is the spiritual quotient of the Jewish people, you know what it depends on? Now you know what's the relationship between the Jewish people and Edom. By Yehoshaphat, who was still a tzaddik, who went in the way of David the Aviv, it says, Umelech ein be'edom. There is no king in Edom. That's not something that happened in the days of Yehoshaphat. That was true all along. From the time of David, it was true that there was no king in Edom. There was a governor, a high commissioner. Why did it say it by Yehoshaphat? It said it by Yehoshaphat in order to tell us that that's the end. After Yehoshaphat, the pendulum is going to swing. And it's going to swing in a way that little by little, Edom is going to free itself of the yoke of Yehuda. And Edom is going to become ascendant as Yaakov descends. And one of the places where this appears to us is here in the pasuk. Yes. The Gemara says in Megillah, Kesavi v'Yerushalayim, Caesarea and Jerusalem. Caesarea represented, Kesaria represented Edom in Eretz Israel. In Yoru Lechoyf, they're going to tell you that both of them are built al tamin. Don't believe it. If somebody's going to tell you both of them are desolate and destroyed, don't believe it. If they're going to tell you that one is built and one is desolate, believe. Because that's the teeter-totter. Is that what they call it? Do you know what a teeter-totter is? Anybody know?
Yeah, awesome.
All right. In other words, that's one of the first words I learned from my wife in Canadian English. A teeter-totter. A teeter-totter. A seesaw. All right. Caesarea v'Yerush. You know what a seesaw? He doesn't even know what a teeter-totter or a seesaw is. That's the way it's supposed to work, because the fact is, even Yitzchak tells Esav, in Torid uforakta, if you're going to go down uforakta ulo, he's going to remove the yoke. The brothers are going to be in struggle. It's really talking about two major cultures, civilizations that are going to be locked in battle throughout all of history. The end is going to be va'olu moshiim b'hart zion lishvot et harisav, where Yaakov will be ascended. But it was in the days of Yehoshaphat, in the days of Yehoshaphat's son, that the change began. Edom began to unshackle itself. And now it continues years later, where the Adomim have already retaken land. For that matter, they may even be holding land that is now part of Eretz Yisrael. So there is a greater degree of ascendancy. You know, of course, there's a very... the difference between a Dalit and a Vesh is very, very small. I've talked often in the past about the Dalit and the Reish. Edom, what's the difference between a Dalit and a Reish? The difference between a Dalit and a Reish is the little chuchicle on the right-hand side of the head of the Dalit. If it's a Dalit, then there's a little piece that goes beyond. See my hand? If it goes beyond that little piece over there, if it doesn't go over the leg, then it is a reish. Very interesting. I once said this, is that there's a very beautiful B'nai Yisoschel. B'nai Yisoschel is one of the great Admorim Chassidim. It may very well work in Mamish right over here to this Dalet and Reish. Gorgeous. I like it. God's curse to man, Adam Arishon, when he sinned and he ate from the Eitz Hadaat, the tree of knowledge. So the curse was coats, thorns, v'dardar, and thistles will grow from the ground. You're going to plant, can't be sure what's going to come out. Coats, v'dardar. Dardar is spelled Dalid Reish. Dalet Reish, says the Heilige B'nai Yisoschel. In Torah, there's one place where you're supposed to write a big Dalet. Where do you write a big Dalet? Echad. Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. There's one place where you have to write a big Reish. In Parashat Kitisa, it says, Lo tishtachaveh le'el acher. So there's a big Reish over there. Why big Dalet and big Reish? Because if they're not big, you can, God forbid, make the mistake of reading Lo Tishtachaveh Le'el, God, you know, Echad. Or Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem, I can't say it out of my mouth, Acher, you know. So in order that we shouldn't be confused, so there's a big Dalet and a big Reish. Says the B'nai Yisoschel, when man rebelled against God and the one mitzvah that he had was not to eat from the Eitz Hadas, and he sinned, do you know what he created? He created confusion throughout all of history. That there will be moments of Dalet and moments of Reish. Moments of Dalet, moments of Reish. Moments at which we will see and perceive. Man will see God clearly. Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. And then there are going to be moments in history, moments of Reish, where God is going to be in concealment. We're going to see other gods, deities, are going to flash before our very eyes. That's the curse that Omar Rishon brought down. That there will always be the movement of Dalet and Reish, Dalet and Reish. So, all right, I had added to this that, therefore, at the end of Parashat Peshalach, it says, after the sneak of attack of Amalek, so it says at the end of Parashat Peshalach, that God wages war with Amalek forever. Ki yad al kes, God's throne is not complete, God's name is not complete until Amalek will be destroyed. Milchama la Hashem va Amalek, God wages war with Amalek, midor dor. And dor, generation over there, is written without a vav. It's written Dalet Reish, Dalet Reish. Milchama la Hashem va Amalek, God wages war with Amalek, midor dor, from generation to generation, because Amalek is the one who brings doubts into the minds of people. He's waging war with God. He wants to conceal and cover God. So there's this constant struggle of Dalet and Reish. Dalet and Reish. That's the struggle of Klal Yisrael and Klal Yisrael and Edom. there is this struggle between the Dalet and the Reish, and if one is ascendant, the other is going to be down. All right. Anyway, bo elat vayish shomer yom hazeh vayishlach achas malachim el tiglas pelese melech hashur lemon. Oy, achas sent messengers to tiglas pelese melech hashur, and we had pointed out already last week that Aram doesn't know it yet, but Aram is in the process of eclipse. Aram is in the process of disappearing from the world scene. The next great civilization, the next great conqueror that's going to take its place is Ashur, Assyria. Assyria is now ascendant. So Achaz sent Malachim messengers to Tiglath Pileser Melech Ashur Lemar, Avdechal Bincha Neiwar Hashan Lenachar Ba'im, your servant and your son, Alei V'Hoshieni Mikaf Melech Aram, come up and save me from the hands of the king of Aram, Umikaf Melech Yisrael from the hand of the king of Israel, Hakomim Alei, who are up against me. The whole thing is terrible. The thing is so bad, they understand a Jewish king joins with a Goyish king to go up against a Jewish king. And now what they're doing is, so now Achaz is going to bring another guy in on his side. Vayikach Achaz et hakesef et hazor aninzot beit Hashem uvotzrot beit hamelech vayishlach lemelech Ashur shochad. And Achaz took the silver and the gold that was found in the house of God and in the otzrot beit hamelech and in the storehouses of the king, and he sent it to Melech Ashur as Shalchad. I think in one as Gresh. I think in one shir some months ago. I don't think I read for you the Gemara in Pesachim. There's a Gemara in Pesachim. I'm going to tell you about the Gemara. The Gemara says the following: when Jews left Egypt, they went out of Egypt with great wealth. What was the wealth that they went out of Egypt with? The wealth that they took with them out of Egypt, and they emptied Egypt, was the wealth that Yosef had gathered during all of the years that he, you know, the whole world came to buy grain from Yosef. Mitzrayim became the wealthiest country in the world. That wealth Klal Yisrael took out with them when they went out to freedom. You may not have noticed it, but the Gemara brings it to our attention. This wealth has been changing hands. This wealth has been moving from one to another.
By virtue of trade or conquest?
Conquest.
Never by trade.
Never by trade. Let me just show you a little bit of it. I'll just tell you the idea that the Gemara tells us. I'll trace it a little bit in Tanakh. I said that one of the thermometers, one of the ways by which we measure where does Klal Yisrael stand in the eyes of God was what's happening with Edom. Is Edom subservient? Or is Edom on the rise? Is there a governor appointed by Klal Yisrael over Edom? Or is Edom ruling itself? There's another thermometer. And this the Gemara tells us clearly. Gemara says that all of that wealth of Mitzrayim was passed on from generation to generation until it came to David and to Shlomo. And then as we go through Melachim, starting someplace in Melachim Aleph, the king Sheshach Melech Aram. So I find the first. I found it. Take a look in Melachim Aleph, Perek Yud Dalet, chapter 14. Melachim Aleph, are you at 14? Well, good, now, you ready? Pasuk 25. Vayehi bashona hachamishis lemelech Rechavam, in the fifth year of the king Rechavam. Rechavam, remember, was the son of Shlomo. Ola Shishak Melech Mitzrayim al Yerushalayim. Shishak, the king of Mitzrayim, came up against Yerushalayim. Vayikach et Otsrot Beit Hashem et Otsrot Beit HaMelech. Is that just about the same words that we have in our pasuk here? He took the treasures of the house of God and the treasures of the house of the king et Hakol Lakach. He took everything. Vayikach et Kol Magine Azov Asher Osa Shtoma. He took all of the golden shields that Shtoma had made. Vayas HaMelech. You know, what he's doing is, he's giving it to Shishak so that Shishak should not attack. Vayas HaMelech Rechavam. Alright. What happened is, he gives it all. He gives it all. He gives it all away. The Gemara says, you know what? You know what he's giving? What is the Otsrod Beit Hashem and the Otsrod Beit? What are they? You know what they are? They're the wealth of Mitzrayim. The wealth of Yosef. Now that's going to move. Yehoshaphat, Asa and Yehoshaphat are going to get it back. Yehoshaphat's son is going to give it away again. Let me show you. Don't take my word for anything.
Who was the one who gave it back when he asked for his children and he gave everything?
You're thinking of something else. That was Achav. Achav, the king of... No, he didn't, the wealth was in Yehuda, in Yerushalayim. In Divrei Ayan in Bet. Divrei Ayan in Bet. You just listen to me. I'm going to show you something.
Didn't Solomon also augment the treasure
of Solomon? Yeah, right. But now, this is after Shlomo. This is Rechavam, his son.
Including whatever
they had gotten from Mitzrayim. The Gemara says the core of this wealth is the wealth that was established by Yosef. Now, in Divrei Hayomim Bet, you with me?
Yeah.
All right. Chapter 20. Chapter 20, if I'm not mistaken, we learn chapter 20.
No,
21. Okay, all right. All right. We didn't learn it. Okay, take it back. Anyway, in chapter 20, in Divrei Ayamim Bet, there's a story of a miraculous victory of Yehoshaphat over his enemies. A miraculous. Israel didn't have to lift a hand. They didn't have to shoot an arrow. And it says in Divrei Ayamim Bet, Pasuk Chaf, Perek Chaf, Pasuk Chaf, Dalet, 24. Yehuda bar amitzpeh lamidbar vayifnu el hehemon. Yehuda came out into the desert. This is Midbar Yehuda, around Tekoa and Amos. That's where they had fallen. The greater army that had come to attack. Vayifnu, they turned to the masses. Vehinom pigodim noflim artzav ein plate. They're all dead. The whole mighty army that has come to invade, they're dead. Ein plate. There's nobody left over. Vayavo Yehoshaphat va'amo lavozet. A tremendous amount of wealth. Uklei hamudos, very expensive vessels. Vayinatzlu lahem. And they emptied, I mean, they simply emptied all of the wealth. Where was the last time the word vayinatzlu was used? When they emptied Mitzrayim, vayinatzlu at Mitzrayim. Le'ein masa, they couldn't carry it anymore, there was so much. Vayiu yomim shlosha boses im et ashol, 3 days. It took them close to 3 days to bring all of the wealth from Midbar Yehuda. Chazal say, you know what wealth this was? The wealth of Yosef had now been brought back to Eretz Yisrael by Yehoshaphat. Rechavam had given it to Shishak Melech Mitzrayim. Amon and Moab had taken it from Shishak, king of Mitzrayim. Yehoshaphat now takes it back from him. In the interim, it has gone off elsewhere and brought back to Eretz Yisrael, and now back to where we are in Melachim. Achaz sends messengers to Tiglath-Pileser, king of Asher, saying, "I am your servant and your son. Come up and save me from the hands of Aram umikaf Melech Yisrael akomim alayv." Vayikach Achaz et hakesef ve et hazahav hanimtzo beit Hashem u'baotzo beit hamelech. I just want you to know that this term, Otsot Hashem and Otsot Ben HaMelech, have been used 4, 5, maybe 6 times. Because this is the great wealth that has been moving from one to the other. And that's one of the parameters. Whoever holds that wealth really is the one who holds sway in the world. You know what the end of the Gemara says? You know where it went ultimately? It went to Edom, and it's hidden someplace. I said Switzerland, but you know what the Gemara says? It went to Edom, and it's hidden in Rome. It's someplace in Rome, the Gemara says, all of the great wealth. It's a Gemara in Sanhedrin. Sanhedrin, I think it's Kuf Tet Zayin. If I remember, I'll bring the Gemara, and I'll read the whole Gemara to you. So I think only in passing I had pointed this out earlier, but I know that I never learned the Gemara with you. So I'm telling you, you see what's happening already. Edom is ascendant. The great wealth is now pouring out of Yerushalayim. Vayishlach l'melech Asher shochad, he sent it as a bribe to the king of Asher. Vayishmael of melech Asher. And the king of Asher listened to him. I think that's terribly important. You know, if you get the, if you have the bribe already, so you have not only the all of the wealth, you can take the country too. But Asher just isn't ready for that yet. In other words, Asher is not ready to become a world conqueror. They're taking it step by step. By Yishmael of Melech Asher, the king of Asher, listened to him. By Yal Melech Asher el Damesek, by Yitbiseha, the king Asher, the king of Asher, comes to Damascus. Damascus is the capital of Aram. It's been the capital of Aram all of these years. The years of Eliyahu, the years of Elisha, Damascus. And now the king of Asher, Assyria, has conquered. He grabbed the city by Yagleho Kira. And he sent them off into exile to Kir. That Ritzin, king of Aram, he kills. Do you know what we're talking about now? We're talking about the end of Malchus, the end of the kingdom of Aram. Vayelech HaMelech Achaz Zekras Tiglas Pelezer Melech Asher Domesek Vayaretem Izbeach Asher B'Domesek Achaz, King Achaz went to Tiglas Pelezer, king of Asher, who is in Domesek, and he saw on Izbeach Asher B'Domesek, the altar that in Damascus. Vayishlach HaMelech Achaz El Uriah HaKoyin. King Achaz sent to Uriah HaKoyin at Demut HaMizbeach, he sent him a plan of the altar that Tavnito L'chol Ma'aseyu and its structure, the way it's done. Even Uriah HaKoyin at HaMizbeach, Uriah HaKoyin built the Mizbeach Kechol Asher Sholach HaMelech Achaz V'Damesek, as everything precisely the way King Achaz had sent from the message. Cain also Uriah HaKoyin, so Uriah HaKoyin did Abba HaMelech Achaz V'Damesek, until the king, in other words, in that brief period of time. Now that he sends the plans, and then he's on his way back, and it is already it is completed. What's so strange? By the way, this is not a mizbeach for idolatry. No. Kavonat Uriah's intention was l'shem shamayim, because he thought, according to the Mefarshim, he thought that the king wants a special mizbeach on which he is going to celebrate the fall of Aram. Do you know what the fall of Aram is? Soviet Russia crumbling. Hitler Germany falling. That's what the fall of Aram is. They don't know what Asher is going to become. But right now it means that a civilization, a kingdom from whom Klal Yisrael had suffered incessantly 200 years, Aram, the end of Aram. It's the end of Aram. Yes, what's the question there?
Why does he need another altar? He has Beit HaMikdash. Judah.
He wants an alternate altar on which to... Alright, I'm not going to keep it up, you know. He doesn't want to make alterations in the service. What he really... The Parshim... What alternatives do I have?
I'm stopping it. Stop it.
Your own ego.
No, this is, that's why the Mefarshim say that in order to celebrate the fall of Acham, that's a chag. You have no idea what kind of chag that is for Klal Yisrael. So he wanted to build a special mizbeach for God. This is the way Uriah HaKohen understands it. There's nothing wrong with that. And what happens if that mizbeach is going to be standing in the Beis HaMikdash? The only place where you can't build another mizbeach and use it is outside the confines of the Beis HaMikdash, but within the confines of the Beis HaMikdash. You're going to see Bayi Cheney, and they're going to build a different mizbeach. Shlomo built a different mizbeach. Didn't use the mizbeach of Moshe. He saw beautiful plants in Damasek, and he sent them to Yehuda, to Uriah HaKohen. Let's go. Vayomar HaMelech midamezek, the king came from Damasek, vayar HaMelech as HaMizbeach, vayiknav HaMelech al HaMizbeach, vayalolov, the king came and he saw the Mizbeach, and the king went on the Mizbeach, vayakter as Eilosov as Minchosov, vayasech as Nisko, vayizro kizdam HaShlomim HaShalom al HaMizbeach. He brought a ketoret, and he brought a carbon, and he brought a mincha, and he poured the nesachim, and then he sprinkled the blood of the shlomim on the mizbeach. That hamizbeach hanechoshet ashel fnei Hashem, the mizbeach that of kapper that was there. The Mefarshim say that this is a bit of a difficult pasuk to understand, but I'll tell you how the Mefarshim learn pshat. That hamizbeach hanakoshet asher lifnei Hashem, the mizbeach hanakoshet that is before God, by yakrei me'eit pnei habayit mibein hamizbeach umibein beit Hashem, by yitain oto al yerech hamizbeach tzafona. So the Mefarshim here, the Das Mikra says the following, that this is a difficult pasuk, and the intention of the pasuk is that in fact Ahaz did confuse the order in which things were brought in the Beis HaMikdash. He commanded that they should bring the new altar that he had built closer into the Beis HaMikdash, and he put it between the two Mizbechot. There was an inner Mizbech and an outer Mizbech, and he brought this in. And he moved it closer. His own Mizbeach that he brought it closer to the center of the Beit HaMikdash. That's how the Radak explains it, and so does the Mitzudas David. Rashi explains that the Pasuk is not really talking about a Mizbeach. It's talking about, there were a lot of other things in the Beit HaMikdash that were made out of copper or brass. There was the kior from which they washed their hands. There were the hands and their the corn in their hands and their legs, and he, when Ahaz made the Mizbeach, he removed the kior, and he moved it to a different part of the house in order to bring his Mizbeach to an area that is more central. And we'll see a little further some more about this. Vayitzaveh, next pasuk, Vayitzaveh HaMelech Ahaz et Uriah HaKohen Lemar. King Ahaz commanded Uriah the Kohen, saying, "Ala mizbeach hagadol hakteret olat hapoke bet minchat haerev bet olat hamelach bet minchato bet olat kol am horetz minchato miniskeim v'chol dam ola v'chol dam zerach olat tizrog mizbeach anuchoshes yiyali lebakeh." Now he commands him that the mizbeach now that's going to be used is his mizbeach. And that all the sacrifices, the Ola, the Shlomim, everything should be brought. Now he is sort of moving the sacrifices from the Mizbeach, which had always been done, to the one that he has brought. The question, of course, is, when it says in the next passage, "Vayas Uriah HaKohen Kichol Asher Tzivah HaMelech Ahaz," Uriah HaKohen did everything that the king had commanded him. Was he right or was he wrong? The Mefarshim say that Uriah surrendered before the king. Says one of the Mefarshim, because it's Dvar Melech, it's the word of the king. the word of the king, and the word of the king is law. Who's going to tell the king what to do? And what the Kli Yakar is saying is that Uriah seems to have absolutely
no power.
All right, no power. I call it influence. Maybe one of the questions that we'll have to ask is maybe he should have refused. Maybe he should have refused. The only thing that's over here, it seems if he would have refused, his refusal would have made absolutely no difference at all. Chizkiyahu, who is going to be the next king, the son of Ahaz, is going to return the order of the Beit HaMikdash to what it was supposed to be. Let me go, just go another few psukim, hang it over. Vayikatzeitz ha-melech ha-chaz et ha-mizgirot ha-mechonot v'yosom ha-yaleihem et ha-kiyor v'et ha-yom horid me'al ha-bokar ha-nechad. They are very difficult psukim, believe me. Now he's taking different parts of the Beit HaMikdash and he was removing them. They had been standing on pedestals. Me'al ha-bokar ha-nechoshet ha-shetachter v'yitin otom ha-tsefet avonim, and he put it on the ground. You know what this is really all related to? I was a chicken, but I was a very I was a smart chicken. I didn't learn with you chapters 7 and 8 of Melachim Aleph. 7 and 8 of Melachim Aleph was the description of the construction of the Beit HaMikdash. Extremely, extremely detailed and very, very technical, and a great deal of differences of opinion amongst the Farshim, what the various items in the Beit HaMikdash were. So I was a chicken then, and of course it comes back to haunt me now, because I have to explain to you what it was that they took apart. So let's go a little further. At Mosach Ashabat Ashabonu Vabayit at there are parts that he is removing because of fear of the king of Ashur. He's making certain changes. We will yet talk about what fear there is. But what's happened over here is the following. What's really happening is Ahaz has not only fallen under the influence of the king of Ashur, the king of Ashur is now ascendant to the point where he is the one who impacts upon what's happening in Yerushalayim. In other words, he snaps his fingers in Damascus, and in Yerushalayim they're going to jump. What really has happened over here is Aram has disappeared from the scene, and Ashur is now the power. And that power, Ashur, is the one that is going to, in a sense, exile 80% of Klal Yisrael. Ashur is the great power. And where does all the wealth lie now? All of the wealth lies in Ashur. V'yet and Tivrei Ochaz Asher Osa Haloyim Ksuvim Al-Seif and Tivrei Yerom L'malchi Yehuda, everything else that Ochaz did is written in the Book of Chronicles of the Kings of Yehuda. V'yishkach Ochaz Ma'avosa V'yikovered Ma'avosa B'ir David V'yimlo Chizkiyahu B'no Tachtov. His son Chizkiyahu rules in his place. I'm going to give you yet an overview, and by the way, we don't have class next week, you know. I'll give you an overview yet of this barrack. Yes? That's very nice.
So it shows that he's taking the role and the rights of the Melech to do what he's doing.
No, why not say it the other way? As far as the king of Ashur is concerned, he said to him, Avdecha ubinchani, I am your servant and I am your son. He's not a melech over there. Isn't that better? Yes, one moment. I'll look. Okay. Go ahead, finish. Does he have a right? That I'll tell you. Go ahead.
We didn't learn 7, 8. I don't know if I want to learn all the exact.
I'm not going to. Don't get me wrong.
When we learn about the Beit HaMikdash, was it built by Shlomo with his ideas, or was it because of inspiration of God? In other words, if God helped me out of it, The Mishnah, we know exactly. We know how to change it because God told us how to write through the Mishnah. Did he tell us exactly
how to
change
it? There's a pasuk in
Divrei. He told us that he weren't allowed to change it. If he didn't tell us, then maybe we are allowed to change it.
There is a pasuk in Divrei Hayamim much, much earlier. It says that David HaMelech gave over to his son Shlomo the plans for the Beis HaMikdash as they had been given to him. As they had been given to him by Shmuel. It says that David was sitting with Shmuel in Nayot Beramah, and what were they doing in this place, Nayot Beramah? They were discussing the construction of the Beit HaMikdash. And David's greatest hope was that he would build the Beit HaMikdash, but he didn't. What he was able to do were two things. Number one, he bought the Har HaBayit, and number two, he prepared the plans. Maybe I should add three. Three was, he was in possession of all of the wealth. And now he was possession of all. So I'm telling you, he didn't make it up. So you're asking me,
Achaz
couldn't change it. All right, so we'll talk about that in 2 weeks.
What? He got it from Shmuel. Shmuel got it from God.
He's talking about, she's asking me about Achaz.
Achaz couldn't change.
She's talking about Achaz in this chapter. The question is whether his changes were substantive or not. That we will yet discuss. Okay. I don't know. I have to go through a lot of information. Yeah, all right. So you'll just hang in over there. Yes?
Some time back, I don't remember the name of the king, who became leprous because he...
Very good, okay.
Because he just brought this incense.
Excellent, hopefully, excellent. All of these questions we will deal with, that's all. I'm going to have you go home, I'm going to deal with all of these questions. I'm just very happy that you know all of these questions. One more question. Ad Hayom Hazeh always means till the day it was written. Who wrote Malachim? A number of people wrote Malachim. I'll read that for you too. Part of it, no, a number of people. All right. I'm putting everything off. Inot Slufnei Achar, for that matter, it's Betoch Achar. So we'll leave everything for the next class. No class next Wednesday. Because it's Shavuos. And I hope I'll have a rest and I'll be able to prepare things well.